How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Well, it's Friday here on this program, and you know what that means? We got a lot of news to talk about here today, and by the grace of the good Lord, none of it is about Sasha and Naomi. No update today whatsoever. So we can talk about other things, and there's plenty of things to talk about today. We got news, not the least of which, obviously, is the departure of Stephanie McMahon from WWE. She is taking a leave of absence, and we'll give you some details on that. And what details we don't give you, well, I guess we can ask Dave Meltzer about it, because he will be on the show in the second segment of the program today, talking about all of the biggest news in the newest edition of the Wrestling Observer News, which I guess probably means we will have to talk about Sasha and Naomi here today. But also, in the final segment of the show, we'll be joined by Jay Bradley, one half of the Fixers tag team, along with Wrecking Ball Ligursky, who I believe may have once feuded with Bruno Sammartino. But anyway, we got a lot of fun stuff to get into today. So all of the news, we got the AEW Dynamite ratings. The show did very well. We've got a look at who the next likely challengers are for Roman Reigns, because, you know, we ain't got none. But the three challengers, spoiler here, are pretty much the three challengers that we've been talking about for weeks now as potential challengers for Roman Reigns. Ric Flair's talked about criticism of his scheduled match at StarCast 5, where as he essentially said, it's not about the money. And I'm not sure anybody actually thought he was only doing it for the money. I think the criticism was more, you have a pacemaker and you want to wrestle at 73. But anyway, he talks about that. We got a lot of stuff to get into. Mike Sempervivi joins us after the break. Lots of folks joining the program today. We'll kick it off after the break, Observer Live. Back in the show, Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also WrestlingObserver.com. Thank God Stephanie McMahon is taking leave of absence, so I don't have to open the show talking about Sasha and Naomi today.
Oh, come on.
In the new edition of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Dave Meltzer provided an update on Stephanie McMahon's leave of absence from WWE, which she announced yesterday, and which in fact caught most people in the company off guard. She announced Thursday she's taking a leave of absence from, quote, the majority of her responsibilities with WWE. She wrote she looks forward to returning to the company after taking this time away to focus on her family. Meltzer reports the leave of absence was 100% Stephanie's choice and had been coming for some time, even though the announcement was a surprise to most. He wrote this came out of nowhere. Most talent and those in the office and creative didn't know about it until they heard that she tweeted it. There were definitely a few people who knew and knew the background, but they weren't saying much past there is more to it. But the basic reason given were not inaccurate. The part about leaving to focus on her family is definitely part of it. It was obviously a tough year with Paul Levesque being out for so long, and she had to pick up a lot of the responsibilities and obviously had to deal from a family standpoint with his health issues. Levesque is back in the office full-time now. So he's in the office full-time, but she's taking a leave of absence. There's no time frame for her return. We are told she is returning. All kinds of speculation has transpired. You know what I need this week is more speculation. But the only thing we were told directly is that this was 100% her choice. This has been coming for some time. Not something that happened out of nowhere, even though it would appear, because virtually nobody knew anything except a few who had kept it totally quiet until just before she released the info. But she was not forced or pressured. It was her choice. As far as what it means for the future, that at this point would be all speculation. She was the public face of the company, had been pushed by the company to be positioned as one of the leading female sports executives in the country. Company president Nick Khan will be taking over her duties, and those who reported to her will now be reporting to him. Stephanie, besides being chief brand officer, I wonder if Brandy's available to take that job over for a while. Member of the company's board of directors, and aside from Vince, was the only original McMahon family member still working for the company. She owns 2.5% of the company, which would be valued at this point. Well, that was yesterday. Yesterday, it was $116 million. Who knows about today? In her role as chief brand officer, she's responsible for ensuring WWE's global brand strength and growth. Although, let's be honest, Stephanie McMahon was not responsible for ensuring the global strength and growth of WWE. Many, many people are responsible for that. But best wishes to her. Hopefully everything works out great and she can return soon. That's the update on Stephanie McMahon. It's going to be a nutty day now.
Sound like you got a beef with the sources, man.
What are you talking about?
They report things. That's where the speculation comes in. And
no, I'm talking about speculation from these fans.
It runs rampant.
I'm turning into a WWE heel. These fans are driving me out of my mind.
Well, Stephanie may be out of her mind right now. When you have three kids, you know, all only a couple of years apart, and she's had a long year. That's something that a lot of people, you know, they talked about Triple H being out and everything, and Stephanie continuing on and how this affected NXT and all this stuff. But it's, you know, because we sometimes don't think about this of, this is a family with three young kids, 12, 14, and 16 years old, that it's tough. And this may be the best time to try to take a break, because I would assume Stephanie McMahon, even though she's got a lot of options outside WWE, is going to be back inside WWE until that company is sold. And, you know, I don't know when you're scheduled to take a break again in a business that's relentless, with a focus like her father that is relentless. It is every day, every moment, you know, spent thinking about wrestling and trying to drive the business forward. When are you going to take another break again? So maybe with what happened with Triple H, it was a Stein to stop and go, hey, you know, appreciate what you got right now. Slow up. He's back to work. Let's ease off the pedal here a little bit and take some time before we go back and kick this thing back into gear again. And you're obviously in safe hands, no matter what anybody wants to say about Nick Khan being the reaper of the McMahon family and forcing people out and all that other nonsense. I mean, my God, he's a great businessman. He's been fantastic for that company. They obviously worked together great to get the TV deals through. They hire him from CAA or where William Morris, wherever exactly he was from. And he's been nothing but a success for them. So it's Vince McMahon's company. Nick Khan is doing great for them. If there's a time to step back, this is certainly a good time to do it.
You know,
you okay?
I made a big mistake yesterday.
Oh, no.
I broke my own rule. I went and I read some of the comments on yesterday's Observer Live on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
What a stupid thing to do.
How bad was it?
Well, you know, normally, like, you know, I'll argue with people and everything like that, but it's rare that I really get irritated. But, man, somebody on there made some comment about, you had mentioned, well, how come there's not the fury over Tony Storm?
Oh, that same energy, eh?
And yes. This guy goes, well, it's because she's white. And, dude, well, I was like, bro, on the list of differences in the two situations, the color of their skin is at the bottom, okay? Like, yes, Toni Storm decided she didn't want to do this anymore, and she went home, okay? You guys realize that, like, she was put in, we talked about the storyline, actually, where they wanted to rip her shirt off and everything like that, which they didn't do. They ended up doing the pie in the face or whatever. But, like, she endured that storyline. She was put in a feud with Charlotte Flair for the title. She lost a match, or I can't remember what the first match was, but they had one match, and it was a DQ ending. And then they built up to a championship match on TV where she was going to go in and she was going to do the job, okay? Now, if Toni Storm had showed up at the building, and then 15 minutes into the show, when she was told that she needed to do a job, she quit and walked out, well, you'd be close to what happened with Sasha and Naomi. But she didn't. She showed up the building. She was told she had to do the job. She went into the ring. She did the match. She did the job. She literally finished out the entire storyline. It was done. And then afterwards, when the show was over, she went home. And so the conclusion you have come to, why there is, you know, a different reaction to what, you know, Sasha and Naomi did when they showed up at the building. We're given this, given a 1 month storyline. And I don't even get into this thing about how, you know, there were no plans after Hell in a Cell. Given that there were no plans for them Monday, and they were given plans, but apparently having no plans after Hell in a Cell is worse than having no plans right now. But anyway, they showed up and they weren't even told they were doing a job. Naomi was going to win. And they decided we're going to walk out at the beginning of the show and just leave now. Somehow, some of you see this as the same thing. How? And then when it's obviously not the same thing, literally all you can come up with as to why the reaction is different is, well, Toni Storm is white.
Wait, time
bro,
out
bro, get out of
time
here.
Time out. Do you understand, though, why people of color, especially women, may have a distinct, different opinion on some of this matter and may factor in other things to have the reaction that they do? Can you see why some people, with the history of WWE, how people are treated, even if Sasha has been obstreperous in the past, do you see why they may be looking at this, seeing Naomi doing this and having a certain feeling or feeling a certain way? I find it difficult that you can't understand why there may be some cynicism over the reports that came
out. This is not cynicism. This is trolling somebody. Okay, and I don't even know if he's trolling.
About,
he might actually be serious.
You're battling. You're trying. There is disingenuous people out there that will use anything. That is true. But there are, again, two things can be true and how somebody looks at something. I mean, there is a reason that some people are looking at this in the way that they are and looking at it with a side eye with it and not just jumping right in and seeing what WWE, how they responded when they've never responded like that before. They built it into their show on Monday when they didn't have to. They made the big deal out of this. So, again,
they walked out at the beginning of the show. They walked out 5 minutes into the show. They quit in the middle of the show.
Why did you bring this up?
Back in a moment, Observer Live. Back in the show, Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Dave, let's talk about Stephanie or something.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, what's up?
She's taking a leave of absence to spend more time with her family and other reasons, which I'm not exactly fully clear of, but that's the public reason. And she'll be back sometime, and that's about it. She's not gone forever. But there is no date for her return either.
But Triple H is going to continue to work full-time in the office?
Yes, he's still working full-time in the office, yes.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see what happens here, but...
Yep.
Would you describe what she did as more a figurehead role? I mean, how big an issue is this going to be, her leaving and everyone taking up her role?
In what? I mean, she was the public face of the company in the sense that, like, if they had, you know, like, let's just say, like, somebody wants a WWE person to, you know, do a symposium or something, she would be the one that they would send. You know, she would do the buzzwords and everything like that. You know, very, you know, public relations with the key people and everything, you know, keep in touch, schmooze, you know, things like that. I mean, creative wise, she had nothing to do with creative at all. You know, sometimes, like, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, in the past she ran creative, but that's years and years ago. Sometimes when people go, oh, Stephanie McMahon, blah, 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 creative, and it's like, that was a very valid point 10 years ago, but she is, I mean, like, you know, she has, like, literally nothing to do with creative. So it's not, in that sense, I don't think you'll be seeing any changes. But, you know, as far as if you were, you know, one of the main sponsors or a media person or something like that, you know, it's probably the person in the company who may have been your contact point. Yeah.
All right. So obviously, new issue of The Observer's up. If you want to read more about Stephanie, it is in The Observer, WrestlingObserver.com. And
a ton about Sasha Banks and Naomi.
We're trying to avoid that topic here today. Is there anything new this morning? If the answer is no, just say no and we'll move on to the next
topic. There's nothing new this morning on it that isn't in the issue. I mean, I guess if you haven't read the issue, there's a ton in the issue. But since I wrote the issue, I know nothing since last night.
Okay. So Roman Reigns needs opponents, even though he's not around.
Well, he does need opponents because he's going to be working three shows this summer. So, yeah.
He's going to be working three shows this summer.
You know, maybe a TV or a house show, too, but three big shows, yeah.
All right. So, who do we got? The obvious Riddle.
Riddle, Orton, and Drew McIntyre are the leading candidates right now, yeah.
Great idea to pin Riddle in that six-man.
Well, I'm not sure we're not going to see him pinned again a couple times.
Well, you're probably right about that. So what is Roman's schedule for this summer? And is there any discussion about splitting these belts up so we actually have a champion again? Which I never thought I would say because I advocated putting the championships together. But I didn't expect the champion to then leave.
Yeah, well, everyone expected, you know, I mean, like, the whole thing was just they're eventually going to have two champions, but I don't know when, but his schedule is July 2nd, you know, I mean, he's going to work TVs to build up these shows, but his three big matches are July 2nd, Vegas, July 3rd, Nashville, and September 3rd in Cardiff, you know, the three stadium shows. I don't think he's going to be doing any pay-per-views besides those. He's not on Chicago. And after that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he works Survivor Series, and then... you know, we'll see what happens. You know, obviously, you know, Royal Rumble and WrestleMania will be all over.
We were talking about the XFL.
And Saudi shows. He'll work the Saudi shows, I would, you know, almost for sure.
Yes. We were talking about the XFL deal, the new TV deal and the season kicking off and everything like that. And I got to thinking, and I don't know what your thoughts are, but, you know, Rock's got a very, very busy filming schedule.
Yes, he does.
But he's also got the kickoff of the XFL, so to speak.
Which is going to be very time-consuming.
Yes. And so my thought was, you know, is it possible that he is going to do zero movie commitments for the first quarter of 2023, which would allow him to do WrestleMania without having to worry about movie commitments and also have the time to help launch the first season of the XFL? So actually the timing for doing a WrestleMania match would be excellent this year because he has two different projects which would require him to take time off from movies.
Well, I'm sure at this point he doesn't know anyway. You know what I mean? It's like ideas will come to him if and, you know, depending on what the projects are that he has to do. I mean, WrestleMania is not going to be number one on his priority list. If he's got some big blockbuster movie thing coming up or a new TV show that he's got to film, he's got Young Rock, you know, things like that. I mean, thankfully the travel isn't so bad. I mean, the travel situation isn't so bad like last year when, you know, he wanted to do a show, but, he was in Australia and he couldn't go back and forth. But, I mean, you know, it's always, you know, until January, it's, you know, if he's going to do WrestleMania against Roman Reigns or not, that's, you know, until January, it's just a hypothetical. You know, in January, he'll have a better idea. But now, you know, it's 6 months from really knowing if he'll be able to do it.
I'm still skeptical he's going to do this match. But if he doesn't, what in the world do they have for WrestleMania next year?
Well, I mean, a lot of times in July, they have no idea what they're going to be doing at WrestleMania next year. But,
well, I mean, even if you have no idea, what idea could you come up with for WrestleMania?
Well, you got to get somebody really hot.
You've crushed Braun Breaker, everybody.
Braun Breaker wins the Rumble.
Braun Breaker, Gable Steveson, I don't know. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, maybe there's another celebrity that we haven't thought of, although I can't even come up with a name.
Bad Bunny, yeah. The Pushes movie in his new action role.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
This seems to be a...
Well, Cody,
a
I mean,
problem.
Honestly...
I guess, Cody, yeah, Cody.
It's got to be Cody, right?
Yeah, Cody Rhodes. They're not rushing...
If it's not
they're...
Braun, it's Cody.
I think it's much more likely Cody than Braun.
It should be.
Yeah. I would say if it's not Rock, I would say Cody's the favorite. Yeah.
Which means you have to protect Cody and make sure that he is untouchable for the most part.
Oh, get out of here, Mike. Don't be ridiculous.
I'm just saying. Protect it would be nice.
Well, if it was... If
I
it
mean,
was
they
me,
should, but...
If it was me, I would make him untouchable, but that's going to be very challenging for people who thrive on 50-50 booking to do that. I mean, he could lose if it's done the right way a couple times, or, you know, but I wouldn't want to do it actually maybe once, but... you know,
well, I mean, we're going to find out a lot in a couple of weeks because it'll be the third Seth Rollins-Cody match. And yeah. Cody has won both of the other matches.
Yes.
So in a 50-50 company, I mean, he's either losing or we're going to get a very rare guy wins all three matches against top star, which I think they should do. It's not going to hurt Seth. doesn't make any difference whatsoever for him.
I think that there's no argument for Seth winning this match. I don't think there's an argument.
Well, there's no logical argument, but the argument would be, well, Cody beat him twice, so he's got to get a win.
That's not a valid argument.
I'm telling you what their argument would be, because they're all about 50-50.
Yeah, but the thing is that without a doubt, Cody going for the championship is something that they're going to do. Okay? So until they get there, Seth Rollins shouldn't be beating him. I mean, afterwards, like, let's say Cody gets his run, whatever, Seth can beat him then, but now, no. I mean, it doesn't make, I cannot come up with a valid argument to beat Cody before he gets a championship match.
Well, if it's just a matter of he gets beat by a better man because it's not a gimmick match, you don't give Seth an out that way, then what do you do with Seth? Then what's Seth's next step on that roster where...
He works with somebody else. Seth's been in that position. It's like Kevin Owens. Those guys, they're kind of recycled. They work with other people. You know, I mean, Seth's not wrestling Roman. Cody is. So Cody should win.
Well, let me ask you this, since we're talking about the lack of depth on the roster, and they always go back to what they know, a guy that they can always go back to that people really believe in is Kevin Owens. Is there a way that even though we've seen things a zillion times with Kevin Owens and pretty much everybody except for Cody, is there a way to always bring Kevin Owens back like Lazarus in case you need him to be a world championship contender?
For a pay-per-view, they could do it. Yeah, they could heat somebody up. It would be tough. But, you know, I mean, the brand draws anyway. It doesn't even matter the matches that much. If you call it WrestleMania, people are going to buy tickets. So, yes, Kevin's very talented. And they, you know, I wouldn't think he'd be high on the list. But I don't think if worse comes to worse, can you put him there? Of course you can, yeah.
What the hell happened to this women's audience for NXT this week? Good God.
What do you mean? I mean, you mean the rating being up or
no? The women's viewership was like all time record lows.
Oh, I did not see that. I didn't even look that closely at the numbers. I just know that the NXT number itself was way up from the week before.
Yeah, the NXT number was way up, but I think it was women 18 to 49 was a 0.05.
Though they've done that before. They've done that before.
So all the dudes heard it was an all-women show and decided to come back to the show, and all the women said, I heard it was an all-women show. We hate Tiffany Stratton. We're out of here. Is that what happened, Brian?
I don't know. That's why I asked Dave.
They've done lower than that with women before. I mean, like normally, I mean, the 18 to 34 number that they usually do is like, you know, 0.07 anyway, and it's more guys than women. So that's not that unusual, really. I mean, it's just, you know... yeah, that's not that unusual of a number.
That is a very low female viewership for a program.
Yeah.
Well, listen, the new Observer, everybody, is available at WrestlingObserver.com right now if you want to head up and check it out. Yes, if you want to read about Sasha and Naomi, that's the top story. And Dave's got all of the details in there, so you can head up there and check it out. Plus all of the other news. There's 40,000 words of news and information in every Observer. And you can grab a print copy. P.O. Box 1228, Campbell, California, 95009. Back in a moment with more Observer Live. Back on the show, Brian Elver is here. Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Very happy today to be joined by Jay Bradley. We talk some NWA here. It's, and really...
Hey, you messed that up. It's the boss, Jay Bradley.
The boss!
I put that in my name for a reason.
We're trying so hard not to talk about the boss on this show here today. But I will allow you to be the boss. Just no talking about Sasha Banks. That's the other rule in the show. No swearing and no talking about Sasha Banks today.
Man.
Okay. Yes. I'll slide in her DMs anyways. That's fine.
All right. Listen... When I was looking at all this information, everything like that, and you mentioned the Fixers tag team, Wrecking Ball Ligursky. Years ago, I was approached by somebody to have a match with Larry Sweeney. This was about 2007. And at the time, I didn't know who Larry Sweeney was. And I heard the name Larry Sweeney, and I thought, this guy's got to be like 55 years old. Like, you know, he had to start working like the 60s or 70s. Larry Sweeney? And it turned out he was younger than I was. But Wrecking Ball Ligursky, are we sure that he didn't feud with Bruno Sammartino?
I think he'd probably be right up Bruno's alley back in the day. You know, a little ethnic origin to the name from the Northeast. I'm pretty sure if you know, Vince Sr. was around. He had his eyes on Wrecking Ball Ligursky to face Bruno in the Garden and both Boston and the big one for people that don't know, Madison Square Garden. You know, some people don't know that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Bradley, I don't know if you're aware of this, boss, but the boss here on this show, Brian Alvarez, he once barnstormed around the Ohio Valley area, a place that you spent a significant period of time, and alongside people like Danny Davis and Rip Rogers, surely, and of course Al Snow, people Brian has run across in the past. What was that like for you? Certainly a unique group of men. All three of those men are. Certainly they are throwbacks, much like a Wrecking Ball Ligursky name is. What was it like for you dealing out there with OVW, and what did you learn?
I learned a lot at OVW. I think it's probably one of the top end places to learn the business of pro wrestling in general. I consider Danny Davis and Al mentors to this day, so you can blame them for all of my antics, and then, you know, pass that blame to Ligursky as well, because it's usually one of them that have made me do what I do. You know, it's a very unique place, unique personalities, but it's very old school as far as its approach, as far as, you know, working a territory. They still employ that as far as, you know, with the live event structure they look to have, and then how you place it off of television on a weekly episodic television format. So you get that experience on top of, you know, the standard wrestling training that you're going to get at just about any academy or school out there. So, you know, and I've always dug the Louisville area. It kind of reminds me of some places of Chicago on a much smaller scale. So always felt at home there. So I do try to venture down there here and there. I haven't lately, but I was there prior to COVID and on and off with some other antics that I had going on in my career, and always enjoyed my time there.
You know, you've been around for a long time. And
Did you just call me old, Alvarez?
I didn't say you were old. I said you'd been around for a long time.
Oh, well, okay. All obviously. Right. I said a young vet, a young veteran.
Well, of course. You're a grizzled young veteran. But
yes, we'll use that.
Yes, when I look at this, you know, Deep South, Ohio Valley, and, you know, Florida Championship Wrestling, and now NWA and WWE and everything like that. I mean,
you missed a couple spots.
I did.
There was Wrestle One.
Yes.
He doesn't know about you and Madman Pondo hooking up.
Man, you didn't do your homework, man.
I did. Well, come on. Listen, if I rattle off all the places you've been, the segment would end. But my point is, as a man who has been to these various places during his career, this business has changed so much, and I want to get your thoughts on that, because when Mike mentioned like the old school OVW and Danny Davis and Rip Rogers, and, you know, I'm looking at these names. I watch this show every single week. They would send me the DVDs of the OVW TV show, and I watch that every single week. Jamin Olivencia is the champion. I mean,
yep.
But when you look back at it, I mean, that was a different business in a lot of ways than it is today. So what are your thoughts on all of the changes that you've seen during your career?
Wow, yeah, that's a deep question there, Alvarez. You wrote that one down earlier in the week, didn't you?
No, it's one of my go-tos.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a good go-to. You put that in your pocket for later.
Yes.
You can't help if you've been in there. I know you've been around the business for a while too, Brian, you know, as a fan, and then, you know, doing your shtick here, reporting on it and interacting and publicizing. You know, I got in this business over 20 years ago, and, you know, even if you put a start point where I signed with WWE and I was in Deep South, like, the, you know, what happens in that ring, you know, has been the same in a way since the beginning of time. You know, it's competitors, and we're putting in an athletic competition to an end that's supposed to mean something, that's supposed to, you know, push a story forward, or you know, elevate a talent, you know, whatever you want to spin it as, but ultimately it all comes down to selling tickets and putting eyes on your product and your match. But, you know, like I said, go back to that start point of Deep South, like, you know, social media wasn't a thing. YouTube, I think, broke right around that time, and that was like taboo. You know, Twitter and, you know, I think Facebook and MySpace were just in its infancy phases too. So it's like Deep South searching for a television outlet when I was there, but we were still filming TV to air at a later date. To now, it's just, you know, anybody, you know, essentially can have some sort of television product on YouTube or a streaming service, depending on what quality you're going to get or the production values. But the opportunity is there, the exposure is there for, you know, new companies and existing companies, talent and otherwise, with social media. So I would say, like, all the stuff around the business is altered and changed dramatically, but what it does inside the ring or inside the arena is still damn near the same. You know, with that, it's like, you know, how do you keep people's attentions? How do you keep people watching? You know what I mean? Is it your character? Is it, you know, me and Ligursky goofing off and hosting a episode of, you know, Power or USA and introducing matches, or is it, you know, 30-second reels and clips on social media now? So, you know, the way fans interact and what they expect from a performer is different too. You know, they want to have a lot of access to you via those social medias and upfront interactions and whatnot. So, but it's for a lot of things though too, I think. You know, even like, you know, if you're in a, you know, pop culture, whether it's music or comics and movies, like all of that's changed. It's a whole other layer of business to consider.
Well, no matter what, experience is the best thing that you can have in your arsenal, and you have a massive amount of it with a unique number of people, whether it be teaming with Madman Pondos or being in OVW or so many things up until what you're doing now in the NWA and elsewhere. But I do have to ask you, because it's like a fever dream now to me, these old Inoki Genome shows. And am I crazy, or did you and Bobby Lashley make a visit over to Japan for a Inoki Genome show? Am I hallucinating that, or did occur? Because it feels like it's forever ago now.
Yeah, it was probably about 10 years ago. I think it was about 2012, 13, somewhere in there. And yeah, talk about a misfit band of gaijin. It was me, Bobby Lashley, Vladimir Kozlov.
Oh my God.
And Viscera. I'm sorry, my puppy is over here going nuts like Ligursky when there's no food at catering.
He heard
right
that
now.
Lineup.
You'll get food. Yeah, but yeah. And then you had some other pro kickboxers like Peter Arts or Aerts. I believe he's a Dutchman.
The lumberjack.
Yes. And very hodgepodge show, but decent audience there, almost a sellout. My first trip to Japan, and very interesting for me and educational. So yeah, you got on. It is a little bit of a hallucination there, like a bad meth trip of pro wrestling and MMA, but it happened.
Well, how are you tapped for something like that? Because it seems to be, it's a lot easier to make connections now to at least make a connection to get over to Japan. I mean, how were you even brought up for something like this?
So a blip on the radar in my career was I had a brief stint at the original Inoki Dojo in Los Angeles, like Santa Monica area, Los Angeles. I don't know what they termed it as when Inoki owned New Japan. I was there for a few months training, and things just weren't going well for me personally and wasn't working out for me professionally, but I had made some connections obviously with the Inoki family and other people. That's how I first came across Dave Marquez, from out that way, from Championship Wrestling, from Hollywood and his UWN network. But that's how the connection was made. And there's, you know, there's good business, and you stay connected with people and networking. And that just became easier with social media, where, you know, you click on a button and there's your old buddy or an old rival or old promoter, booker, trainer, whatever, and you guys can stay connected on you know, the interwebs or whatever. I mean, even Legersky can do that. I mean, we watch as a point and click. He's better at the internet than I am. He learns stuff like, teaches me stuff like that all the time. But yeah, so that's kind of how it was. You know, I still had some contact with the Inoki family, particularly Simon, and you know, he had come across my social media and made a deal.
That is the worst breaking of kayfabe that I've ever heard, that Wrecking Ball Legersky is good on the internet.
Well, look it. I tell other people about Legersky. Here's the thing. He's not dumb. He just has a very smart single track mind. So like, you get him going on one track, he's an idiot savant.
But if you derail
that train, it's like a nuclear meltdown.
Sure. It's like a train wreck.
He tweets with train a hammer wreck. And a chisel,
with a wrecking ball with a train wreck.
Oh,
imagine that.
Hey, June 11th, Always Ready on pay-per-view, the NWA. And I'm not sure exactly how much has been announced yet, but what can you tell us about your participation at the show?
Well, there's been, I think they just announced my beatdown on Rock and Roll this past week. So it'll be myself and Wrecking Ball Legersky versus the old Kentucky Waterfall icon himself, Ricky Morton, and his entitled son, Kerry. I don't know if you saw that recently with Wrecking Ball beating up on old Punky a couple weeks ago or last week on NWA USA on Saturdays. And then there's a third variable that's getting to be interesting with I think it's George Costanza's son, AJ Costanza, and a mystery partner. So I don't know who this mystery partner is. I don't know why he's in the match. I'm not even going to ask Wrecking Ball on that because it might make him blow a gasket. His wheels start spinning, and like I said, the hamster will fall off the wheel, and we're done.
Don't. Hold that thought. We got to head to a commercial break here. It is radio. We'll be back in a moment to finish the plugs. Wrestling Observer Live. Back in the show, Brian Alvarez here. Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also WrestlingObserver.com. The Boss! Joining us today. The Boss! Jay Bradley.
Put some respect on that.
That's right. June 11th, Always Ready on pay-per-view. The NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance. You and the Wrecking Ball. Going to be tearing it up on that show, dropping that ball on everyone's heads. So let's get some plugs in here.
Did you just say you're going to... You just want me to teabag someone on pay-per-view?
No, not I. Dropping the wrecking ball on their heads.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
All right. We'll go with that.
Holy smokes. Hey, tell us about the show, your own social media, whatever's on your mind.
So we got a big three-way tag match, like I was saying before these ads rudely interrupted.
Yes.
What I was about to say. So you got this guy, AJ Costanza, with the mystery partner in one corner. In one corner, you got me and Legersky. In another corner, you got nobody because it's only three-way, not four. And in the fourth, you got Punky Rock and Roll Ricky Morton and that entitled millennial brat kid of his, Kerry Morton. And it's going to be a three-way. We got a lot of variables. Like I said, it's three. If you know, right after two, there's three instead of two. And then there's a mystery man. And now there's rumored to be the winner is going to get a shot at the NWA tag team titles, which are also on the line in Knoxville that same night with La Rebellion versus Doug Williams and Harry Smith, or also known to some as Davey Boy Smith Jr.
Yes.
So that's going to be a lot of tag team shuffling going on that match or that night. I don't know about you, Alvarez, but I think I got the inside track. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You might want to put some money on me and Wrecking Ball because you know what? We're fixers.
We take care of
business and we fix any problem. And I see a lot of problems when I look at that run sheet.
Well, we got a problem here and that's we're out of time. But I want to thank you so much for doing the show today. Everybody for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Wrestling Observer Live.